All right, I'm going to go ahead and get started. I've got a lot to cover. So we're going to jump right into it. Today we're going to be studying Job. I've just got a couple pictures. I had never really studied him before as a subject, so it was kind of interesting. But he committed several murders. His Abner on the your left, and on the right is Amasa. And what do we know about him? He was a nephew of King David, the son of David's sister, Zeruah. And he had two brothers, Abishai and Ashiel. And he was a skillful military tactician and quite a politician, I think. And basically throughout his life, he served David, as we know. And his Hebrew name means to praise God or Yahweh, his father. And as we just finished the study of David, we read most of, much of the account here, but we're going to go back through and pick out the pieces. So we're going to pick up shortly after Saul's death. David's now king of Judah. Saul's commander of the army was Abner, and he's taken Saul's son, Ishbosheth, and set him up as king over the northern tribes. And so we'll start in 2 Samuel 2. And Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and the servants of David went out and met by the pool of Gibeon. So they sat down on one side of the pool and the other on the other side of the pool. So we have these as yet opposing forces sitting on each side of this pool. As of yet, they haven't declared war. Then Abner said to Joab, "Let the young men now arise and compete before us." And Joab said, "Let them rise." So they arose and went over by number, 12 from Benjamin, followers of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 from the servants of David. And each one grasped his opponent by the head and thrust his sword in his opponent's side. So they fell down together. Therefore, that place was called the Field of Sharp Swords, which is Gibeon. So there was a very fierce battle that day, and Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of the Lord. Now the three sons of Zeruiah were there, Joab, Abishai, and Ashiel. And Ashiel was as fleet of foot as a wild gazelle. So Ashiel pursued Abner, and in going he did not turn to the right hand to the left hand from following Abner. So there's this retreat now, people going everywhere, and he single-handedly is following Abner. Then Abner looked behind him and said, "Are you Ashiel?" He answered, "I am." And Abner said to him, "Turn aside to your right hand or to your left and lay hold of one of the young men and take his armor." So my guess is these are the armor bearers of him, of Abner, and he's saying, "Why don't you go after them? So take the armor for yourself." But Ashiel would not turn aside from following him. So Abner said again to Ashiel, "Turn aside from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How then could I face your brother Joab?" However, he refused to turn aside. Therefore, Abner struck him in the stomach with the blunt end of the spear so that the spear came out of his back, and he fell down there and died on the spot. So it was that as many as came to the place where Ashiel fell down and died stood still. And we can tell from this account, Abner really didn't want to kill him. Otherwise, he would have used the sharp end of the spear. Instead, he used the bottom end and basically in self-defense kills him. Joab and Abishai also pursued Abner, and then the sun was going down when they came to the hill of Amana, which is before Gia by the road. Come on. To the wilderness of Gibeon. Now the children of Benjamin gathered together behind Abner and became a unit and took their stand on top of the hill. Then Abner called to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever? Do you not know that it will be bitter in the latter end? How long will it be then until you tell the people to return from pursuing their brethren And Joab said, "As God lives, unless you had spoken, surely then by morning all the people would have given up pursuing their brethren." So Joab blew a trumpet, that's the shofar, and all the people stood still and did not pursue Israel anymore, nor did they fight anymore. Then Abner and his men went on all that night through the plain, crossed over the Jordan, and went through all Bithron, and they came to Mahanaim. So Joab returned from pursuing Abner, and when he had gathered all the people together, there were missing of David's servants 19 men and Ashiel. So from this little brief confrontation, a couple things we can know or learn. Basically, this little skirmish that started with 12 men has escalated into a full-blown war. We saw that Abner tried to avoid killing Joab's brother and did so more or less in a defensive manner. And here we see that another case where David's house is getting stronger and Saul's house was getting weaker, as we had 20 men killed from David's force and 360 from Abner's force by the time they called off the battle. So civil war continues, and it turns out that Ishbosheth and Abner have their falling out over Saul's concubine. Tim went over that. And Abner decides to switch sides and now back David. So he sends messengers to David and says that he would like to help David's cause. So we'll pick up in 2 Samuel 3. So Abner and 20 men with him came to David at Hebron, and David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. Then Abner said to David, "I will arise and go and gather all Israel to my lord, the king, that they may make a covenant with you, and that you may reign over all that your heart desires." So David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. At that moment the servants of David and Joab came from a raid and brought much spoil with them. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he had gone in peace. When Joab and all the troops that were with him had come, they told Joab, saying, "Abner the son of Ner came to the king, and he sent him away, and he has gone in peace." So, right, this is his enemy, if you will, up to this point. And, of course, he had killed Joab's brother. Then Joab came to the king and said, "What have you done? Look, Abner came to you. Why is it that you sent him away and he is already gone?" I mean, in his thinking, he thought if he just killed Abner, it would have been a done deal. The war would have been over. "Surely you realize that Abner, the son of Ner, came to deceive you. You know that you're going out and you're coming in and to know all that you are doing." And when Joab had gone from David's presence, he sent messengers after Abner, who brought him back from the well of Sirah. But David did not know it. Now when Abner had returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him privately, and there stabbed him in the stomach so that he died for the blood of Ashiel, his brother. And that was the picture that we saw at the start. Afterward, when David heard it, he said, "My kingdom and I are guiltless before the Lord forever of the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. Let it rest on the head of Joab and on all his father's house, and let there never fail to be in the house of Joab one who has a discharge or is a leper or who leans on a staff or falls by the sword or who lacks bread." So David here's referring back to the litany of curses that we read in Leviticus chapter 26 and Deuteronomy 28, kind of the blessing and cursing, what happens if they disobey. So David is explicitly calling these out here. So Joab and Abishai's brother killed Abner because he had killed their brother Ashiel at Gibeon in the battle. So obviously this was a whole premeditated murder, revenge killing. Joab had, under the I guess, authority of David had sent a party asking him to come back as though the king wanted to talk to him. And then he, of course, kills him in the gate before he actually reaches back to David. So Joab, I think, is a little bit surprised about David's response to this. So we pick up in verse 31. Then David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, "Tear your clothes, gird yourselves with sackcloth, and mourn for Abner." And King David followed the coffin. So they buried Abner in Hebron, and the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. And the king sang a lament over Abner and said, "Should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound, nor your feet put into fetters. As a man falls before wicked men, so you fell." Then all the people wept over him again. And when all the people came to persuade David to eat food while it was still day, David took an oath, saying, "God, do so to me and more also, if I taste bread or anything else till the sun goes down." Now all the people took note of it, and it pleased them, since whatever the king did pleased all the people. For all the people and all Israel understood that day that it had not been the king's intent to kill Abner, the son of Ner. Then the king said to his servants, "Do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day? And I am weak today, though anointed king. And these men, the sons of Zeruiah," so Joab and Abishai, "are too harsh for me. The Lord shall repay the evildoer according to his wickedness." So, of course, Joab is the leader, commander of his army. He commits this murder in spite of Abner's murder. David continues to use Joab as the commander of his army. We see here just a little bit later. But rather than punish David, he says that the Lord will punish him. So we're going to move on to see a little bit different side of Job. So we've seen him commit murder. And here we see a little bit, like I said, a different side of him. The Ammonites and the Syrians had teamed up and were basically in two groups, one in front and one behind. They numbered about 33,000. And we're going to pick up right before the battle here. When Joab saw that the battle line was against him, before and behind, he chose some of Israel's best and put them in battle array against the Syrians. And the rest of the people he put under the command of Abishai's brother, that he might set them in battle array against the people of Ammon, so the front and rear. Then he said, "If the Syrians are too strong for me, then you shall help me. But if the people of Ammon are too strong for you, then I will come and help you. Be of good courage and let us be strong for our people and for the cities of our God. And may the Lord do what is good in his sight." So Joab and the people who were with him drew near for the battle against the Syrians, and they fled before him. So they got in their battle configurations, and turns out they didn't even have to fight. Everybody just fled. When the people of Ammon saw that the Syrians were fleeing, they also fled before Abishai and entered the city. So Joab returned from the people of Ammon and went to Jerusalem. So I want to look back at what Joab says in verse 12 here. He said, "Be of good courage." He's telling his men, good courage and let us be strong. So in this verse, he also appears to be calling out to God for help. And he reminds his forces, I would say, that really this is God's battle, a religious battle. So I think quite a contrast from what we saw before with Abner. We next see his role, or part, if you will, with David and Bathsheba. And everybody knows this story. We're going to pick up basically when he was told to go ahead and kill Uriah. "In the morning it happened that David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it to the hand of Uriah. And he wrote the letter saying, "Set Uriah in the forefront of the hottest battle and retreat from him, that he may be struck down and die." So it was while Joab besieged the city that he assigned Uriah to a place where he knew there were valiant men. Then the men of the city came out and fought with Joab, and some of the people of the servants of David fell, and Uriah the Hittite died also. Then Joab sent and told David all these things concerning war. And I'm going to skip some here, but recall that in addition to Uriah dying, these other men had died. And if he had just set Uriah out by himself, people would have known it was a setup. So he had to include these other people. And basically, Joab tells the messenger, fabricates a story. He's afraid that King David will be upset about others dying. But in fact, David answers this way. Then David said to the messenger, thus you shall say to Joab, do not let this thing displease you, for the sword devours one as well as another. Strengthen your attack against the city and overthrow it, so encourage him. So here Joab was worried about the innocent, if you will. Of course, they were all innocent, and what David's response would be. And David basically replies, you know, the sword devours one as well as another. Don't worry about it. So I think, you know, on David's part here, he's trying to redirect Joab's thoughts away from the murder that they've just committed, and again to focus him on the attack of the city. But, you know, here we see that Joab is compliant, and he executes his orders to kill, have Uriah killed without any hesitation or remorse. And that he himself really wasn't concerned about killing the others, but rather whether or not David would be. So we're jumping ahead in the narrative. This is after now the birth of Solomon, and Joab is still leading David's war effort with great success. And we'll go ahead and read this, 2 Samuel 12. Now Joab fought against Rabbah and the people of Ammon and took the royal city. And Joab sent messengers to David and said, I have fought against Rabbah, and I have taken the city's water supply. Now therefore gather the rest of the people together and encamp against the city and take it, lest I take the city and it be called after my name. So he's sealed off the city, and right, this basically all they have to do now is essentially starve them out and come and take the city. And so, but he's worried that he will get the credit, so he tells David to come. So David gathered all the people together and went to Rabbah, fought against it, and took it. Then he took their king's crown from his head. Its weight was a talent of gold with precious stones, and it was set on David's head. Also, he brought out the spoil of the city in great abundance. So throughout this exchange, you know, with David and Job, there's a continuing need to wage war, because right at this time in history, they didn't have taxes, so your funding for the government was by the spoils of war. So there was a constant need for this. And here we see that Joab was worried about getting credit for this big victory, and so summoned David. Next glimpse we see of Joab is after Absalom kills Ammon for the crime he committed against Tamar. He's fled to Geshur, and so he's been away for 3 years now. And the scripture tells us that King David at this point longed to see his son. And so Joab comes up with a pretty brave plan here, and I think it demonstrates that he had knowledge of the law. And so what he's going to do in this plan is he's basically going to rely on David's knowledge of the law, and in particular the familiarity he has with the account of Cain and Abel. And in an effort to suggest that Absalom's life be spared. So I haven't. You could go through this almost verse by verse and draw a comparison, but I didn't think that was worth it. Just think about what happened with Cain and Abel, and as we read. So we'll pick up 2 Samuel 14. So Joab the son of Zeruiah perceived that the king's heart was concerned about Absalom. And Joab sent to Tekoa and brought from there a wise woman and said to her, "Please pretend to be a mourner and put on mourning apparel. Do not anoint yourself with oil, but act like a woman who has been mourning a long time for the dead. Go to the king and speak to him in this manner." So Joab put the words in her mouth, and when the woman of Tekoa spoke to the king, she fell on her face to the ground and prostrated herself and said, "Help, O king." Then the king said to her, "What troubles you?" And she answered, "Indeed, I am a widow. My husband is dead. Now your maidservant has two sons, and the two fought with each other in the field. And there was one to part them, and there was no one to part them, but the one struck the other and killed him. And now the whole family has risen up against your maidservant, and they said, 'Deliver him who struck his brother, that we may execute him for the life of his brother whom he killed. And we will destroy the heir also.' So they would extinguish my ember that is left and leave to my husband neither name nor remnant on the earth." Then the king said to the woman, "Go to your house, and I will give orders concerning you." And the woman of Tekoa said to the king, "My lord, O king, let the iniquity be on me and on my father's house, and on the king and his throne be guiltless." So the king said, "Whoever says anything to you, bring him to me, and he shall not touch you any more." Then she said, "Please let the king remember the Lord your God. Do not permit the avenger of blood to destroy any more, lest they destroy my son." And he said, "As the Lord lives, not one hair of your son shall fall to the ground." Therefore the woman said, "Please let your maidservant speak another word to the to my lord the king," which is pretty brave here. And he said, "Say on." So the woman said, "Why then have you schemed such a thing against the people of God?" So she's alluding to now the real reason she's there. "For the king speaks this thing as one who is guilty, that the king does not bring his banished one home again. For we will surely die and become like water spilled on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Yet God does not take away a life, but he devises means so that his banished ones are not expelled from him. Now therefore I have come to speak of this thing to my lord the king, because the people have made me afraid. And your maidservant said, 'I will now speak to the king. It may be that the king will perform the request of his maidservant, for the king will hear and deliver his maidservant from the hand of the man who would destroy me, and my son together from the inheritance of God.' Your maidservant said, 'The word of my lord the king will now be comforting for the angel of God. So is my lord the king in discerning good and evil, and may the Lord your God be with you.'" So again, she's quite bold, and of course, Joab is the one that constructed all that she was supposed to say here. And so she's basically directed David's thoughts toward forgiveness. Then the king answered and said to the woman, "Please do not hide anything from me that I ask of you." And the woman said, "Please let my lord the king speak." So the king said, "Is the hand of Joab with you in all this?" And the woman answered and said, "As you live, my lord the king, no one can turn to the right hand or to the left hand from anything that my lord the king has spoken. For your servant Job commanded me and put all these words in the mouth of your maidservant. To bring about this change of affairs, your servant Job has done this thing. But the Lord is wise according to the wisdom of the angel of God, to know everything that is in the earth." And the king said to Joab, "All right, I have granted this thing. Go therefore, bring back the young man Absalom." Then Joab fell to the ground on his face and bowed himself and thanked the king. And Joab said, "Today your servant knows that I have found favor in your sight, my lord, O king, in that the king has fulfilled the request of his servant. So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. And the king said, "Let him return to his own house, but do not let him see my face." So Absalom returned to his own house, but he did not see the king's face. So, obviously that was quite brave on Joab's part. And in the end, when he sees that the his request is or idea of bringing Absalom back is accepted, he falls before David. And I'm going to summarize a little bit later this whole thing. But now, moving forward, Absalom is in Israel, but he's prevented from taking part at all in the court. He's not allowed to see David. And Absalom basically has now decided to revolt against David, and he set up Amasa as his commander of his army. And at this point in the story, they're pursuing David. So David is on the run at this point. And David numbered the people who were with him and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. Then David sent out one-third of the people under the hand of Joab, one-third under the hand of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah. So David, of course, is still using these two, Joab's brother, and one-third under the hand of Ittai the Gittite. And the king said to the people, "I will surely go out with you myself." But the people answered, "You shall not go out, for if we flee away, then they will not care about us, nor if half of us die will they care about us. But you are worth 10,000 of us now, for you are now more help to us in the city." Then the king said to them, "Whatever seems best to you I will do." So the king stood beside the gate, and all the people went out by hundreds and by thousands. Now the king commanded Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, saying, "Deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom." And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains orders concerning Absalom. So the people went out into the field of battle against Israel, and the battle was in the woods of Ephraim. The people of Israel were overthrown there before the servants of David, and a great slaughter of 20,000 took place there that day. For the battle there was scattered over the face of the whole countryside, and the woods devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. Then Absalom met the servants of David. Absalom rode on a mule, and the mule went under the thick boughs of a great terebinth tree, and his head caught in the terebinth. So he was left hanging between heaven and earth, and the mule which was under him went out. So there he is, stuck either by the hair or branches around the neck, and he can't get out. And he's hanging in a tree, so this brings back to mind Deuteronomy 21:23. "His body shall not remain overnight on the tree, but you shall surely bury him that day, so that you do not defile the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance, for he who is hanged is accursed of God." And the word there, hanged, is the same Hebrew word there. Now a certain man saw it and told Joab and said, "I just saw Absalom hanging in the terebinth tree." So Joab said to the man who told him, "You just saw him? And why did you not strike him there to the ground? I would have given you 10 shekels of silver and a belt." But the man said to Joab, "Though I were to receive 1,000 shekels of silver in my hand, I would not raise my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing the king commanded you and Abishai and Ittai, saying, 'Beware lest anyone touch the young man Absalom.' Otherwise I would have dealt falsely against my own life, for there is nothing hidden from the king, and you yourself would have set yourself against me." Then Joab said, "I cannot linger with you." And he took 3 spears in his hand and thrust them through Absalom's heart while he was still alive in the midst of the terebinth tree. And 10 young men who bore Joab's armor surrounded Absalom and struck and killed him. So Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing Israel, for Joab held back the people. And they took Absalom and cast him into a large pit in the woods and laid a very large heap of stones over him. Then all Israel fled, everyone to his own tent. So just as required by the law, which we read in Deuteronomy 21, they took him down from the tree and buried him. Then Amiaz, the son of Zadok, said, "Let me run now and take the news to the king, how the Lord has avenged him on his enemies." And Joab said to him, "You shall not take the news this day, for you shall take the news another day. But today you shall take no news, because the king's son is dead." Then Joab said to the Cushite, "Go." So why would he not tell Amahaz to go to David? You recall what happened to other messengers that were sent to David, informing of Saul's death and such. So here, you know, we have Amahaz is an Israelite, but Joab sends a Cushite, a non-Israelite, to go give the news. So go tell the king what you have seen. So the Cushite bowed himself to Joab and ran. And Amahaz, the son of Zadok, said again to Joab, "But whatever happens, please let me also run after the Cushite." So Joab said, "Why will you run, my son, since you have no news ready?" "But whatever happens," he said, "let me run." So he said to him, "Run." Then Amahaz ran by way of the plain and outran the Cushite. Now David was sitting between the two gates, and the watchman went up to the roof over the gate to the wall, lifted his eyes and looked, and there was a man running alone. Then the watchman cried out and told the king, and the king said, "If he is alone, there is news in his mouth." And he came rapidly and drew near. Then the watchman saw another man running, and the watchman called to the gatekeeper and said, "There is another man running alone." And the king said, "He also brings news." So the watchman said, "I think the running of the first is like the running of Amahaz and the son of Zadok." And the king said, "He is a good man and comes with good news." So Amahaz called out and said to the king, "All is well." Then he bowed down in his face to the earth before the king and said, "Blessed be the Lord your God, who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord the king." The king said, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" Amahaz answered, "When Joab sent the king's servant and me, your servant, I saw a great tumult, but I did not know what it was about." So he doesn't quite tell the truth at this point. And the king said, "Turn aside and stand there." So he turned aside and stood still. Just then the Cushite came, and the Cushite said, "There is good news, my lord the king, for the Lord has avenged you this day and all of those who rose against you." And the king said to the Cushite, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" So the Cushite answered, "May the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise against you do harm be like that young man." Then the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he wept, he said thus, "O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place. O Absalom, my son, my son." And Joab was told, "Behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom." So that victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people, for the people heard it that day. The king is grieved for his son, and the people stole back into the city that day as people who were ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. But the king covered his face, and the king cried out with a loud voice, "O my son Absalom, Absalom my son." And Joab came into the house of the king and said, "Today you have disgraced all your servants who today have saved your life." So this is, again, quite a brave move by Joab. "The lives of your sons and daughters, the lives of your wives, and the lives of your concubines, and that you love your enemies and hate your friends. For you have declared today that you regard neither princes nor servants. For today I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all of us had died today, that it would have pleased you well. Now therefore, arise, go out, and speak comfort to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, not one will stay with you this night. And that will be far worse for you than all the evil that has befallen you from your youth until now." So I am falling behind here, so I'll skip that little bit. So in this whole incident, Joab's demonstrated his knowledge of the law, and in particular, he relied upon his knowledge of Cain and Abel's story to help bring Absalom back. What was his motivation for bringing him back? Was it for David's sake or was it for his? I think probably it was for his sake, because at this point Absalom was the heir apparent to the throne. And so I think he's thinking, you know, his longevity is with him. But, of course, he knew right away when David kept him away from the royal court that he was no longer in the chain for inheritance. And we know that Joab's priority was to win the battle. He didn't care about the killing of Absalom. He knew that if he killed him, all the others that were fighting for him would give up, and that's, of course, what happened. And we see that when Joab did come in to David, he had no empathy for David in the loss of his son, didn't display any, which would be appropriate. But at the same time, he boldly corrected David and was proper in bringing this about, that he had humiliated his troops. So with the death of Absalom, David appoints Amasa as commander of the army. So in a way, what David's doing now is he's trying to tie those that fought for Absalom pull them into his kingdom, if you will, and at the same time he is reprimanding Joab for the killing of his son. And there's a revolt. A man named Sheba comes on the picture. And I guess I'm not going to read this. I'm going to go on. But basically, they send him out to battle. And I'll pick up. Amasa was actually slow in going out to battle. David and his brother go out. Joab and his brother go out, and they meet up, and I'll pick up in verse 9. Then Joab said to Amasa, "Are you in health, my brother?" And Joab took Amasa by the beard and his right hand to kiss him. But Amasa did not notice the sword that was in Joab's hand, and he struck him with it in the stomach, and his entrails poured out on the ground, and he did not strike him again. So he kills David's appointed commander. He's basically committing treason. And it says here, you know, his entrails poured out on the ground. So it wasn't a simple stab, but he pretty much gutted him. And what happens then in the story is basically the troops that were loyal to David and following Amasa now have a problem. One of Joab's soldiers tells everyone to follow Joab, and they end up having to drag Amasa off the highway, and they do, and then the men follow Joab, and they end up routing the city. And immediately after this, we see that Joab is, in fact, appointed again as the leader over the army. So even though he's committed murder again, he did save the battle, if you will, and David reinstates him. So why would he want to kill Amasa? Basically, his troops, he had just fought Amasa and probably thought he was guilty of treason. He had also taken his job, and he knew that if Amasa was dead, he could take over, and of course that's what happened. Here we see a glimpse that he actually, among the soldiers anyway, carried as much weight as the word of David. So he was quite powerful in his own right. And again, we saw the reinstatement of Joab, but David continues to use him and is just postponing his punishment. He has another brief bit of positive influence here. I won't read it, but basically here David's going to take the census, and Joab warns him here in the yellow that it's not proper to count the number of people. Now may the Lord your God add to the people 100 times more than there are, and may the eyes of my Lord see it. But why does my Lord King desire this thing? And it turns out they go out and they count. It takes them 9 months, 20 days to count. And in the end, we see that there were 800,000 people. But throughout David's sin, 70,000 people ended up dying. And now we're pretty much at the end of David's life. And David instructs Solomon this: "Moreover, you know that what Joab the son of Zeruiah did to me, and what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, to Abner the son of Ner and Amasa the son of Jether, whom he killed. And he shed the blood of war in peacetime, and put the blood of war on his belt that was around his waist, and on his sandals that were on his feet. Therefore, do according to your wisdom, and do not let his gray hair go down to the grave in peace." So he's telling Solomon to take care of him. And for sake of time, basically that's what happens. He retreats. He backs Adonijah now, who was next in line in the throne, Joab does. And of course, Solomon is the one who rightly becomes king. So Solomon is now king, and Joab finds out about it, runs into the tabernacle. Solomon sends one of his people in there to kill him. And he won't leave the tabernacle, so he goes back to Solomon, and this is what Solomon says: "Do as he said, and strike him down and bury him, that you may take away from me and from the house of my father the innocent blood which Joab shed. So the Lord will return his blood on his head, because he struck down two men who, more righteous and better than he, and killed them with a sword. Abner the son of Ner, the commander of the army of Israel, and Amasa the son of Jether, the commander of the army of Judah. Though my father David did not know it, their blood shall therefore return upon the head of Joab and upon the head of his descendants forever. But upon David and his descendants, upon his house and his throne, there shall be peace forever from the Lord." So Job is finally killed. So in conclusion here, let's go through some of the highlights of what we learned. So we saw that, I think, Joab was blessed with many natural talents and abilities. But rather than use those talents to serve God, he himself pursued bitterness, treachery, and revenge. Romans 12, "Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give peace to wrath. For it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord." And of course, contrasted, this is what David did. We saw that Joab had some good character in him, displayed it at times. And although he on occasion showed good judgment, it was pretty infrequent. So Proverbs 3, 5 through 7, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil." Obviously, Joab trusted in himself all the time, and his natural relied upon himself, I should say. So another thing that we should point out is, unlike David, who we knew had the Holy Spirit, there's no evidence that Joab was indwelt. And we knew what God thought of David here, that he was a man after his own heart, and we know that David was not a perfect individual. But again, as Joab relied on his own heart to determine actions instead of referring to the Lord frequently, I thought of James here. So James 3, 13 through 18. "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So I think Joab here, he's kind of can be a lot like us. Although we have the Holy Spirit, we don't have to rely on it. If we don't turn to it, we see what can happen. And he's a good example of that, where he both had a lot of good points, but as a rule, he relied on himself rather than the Lord. So sorry for the whirlwind tour, but I originally was 20 slides more, and I cut it down to 59. So any questions? All right, thank you.